Lou Manfredini here. Do you have cracked or sunken concrete areas around your home? Call PermaSeal for a free estimate. Don't replace it, raise it. Call 800-421-7325 or visit permaseal.net.
The one and only Tom Skilling is with us. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Lisa, I am great, and hi to Steve as well. It's so good to hear your voice again, Lisa. I hear you on the radio, but I mean to hear it here on the phone. Good to talk to you.
Oh, it's always wonderful. I love following your adventures on Facebook because in my retirement, I would want to be on the ocean every single day, and it seems like you're taking those walks on a pretty regular basis.
You know what, Lisa? If anybody had told me 15 years ago that I'd be going back and forth from Hawaii and snorkeling and going underwater with a little GoPro camera trying to film the fishies, I would have said you were crazy. But I tell you, I'm having a ball. You know, I went on one of these snorkeling episodes or ventures, and also we were following whales out there, and they threw us over the side of the boat. We had our masks on and our snorkels and all. And I was underwater, and all of a sudden the guide handed me this octopus, and he videoed it. And I said, "How are you videoing this thing?" He said, "Oh, it's a little GoPro camera." Well, everybody in our business uses GoPro cameras, but I had never had any experience with them. And boy, am I having fun with that. I'm able to time-lapse things. I'm doing it off my balcony here in Chicago again, and so it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it's amazing
absolutely
what
wonderful.
Goes on under the surface out there in Hawaii.
You ever,
all these fish and all.
You ever sit there, Tom, in your Bermudas on the boat, ready to go out, and then someone next to you says, "Are you Tom Skilling?"
Hey, Steve, I've got a story for you. You know, I was over watching the Kilauea volcano erupt. It's done it about 24 times now since December 23rd. And these two beautiful ladies came over to me and said, "Are you Tom Skilling?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "You're from Chicago." "Oh, no." They said, we're from Canada. And they said they watch, they check out my Facebook posts in Canada, Calgary, Canada. But most of the time when I hear from, you know, folks who recognize me, it's from Chicagoans. And boy, I'll tell you, we're everywhere. You know, a lot of Chicagoans out there.
Well, you know, that means you become an
really a lot of fun.
You become a social media influencer then.
Oh, yes, you are.
You know what? I get so many comments off that Facebook page. There's another surprise. It was always wonderful because when severe weather broke, you know, I always remember working with Eddie Schwartz on the radio. I always thought, you know, when severe weather broke, Eddie opened the lines and it was fun in my early years. And this social media thing has given me access to storm reports that often are my first indication of how badly a storm has affected an area. And you're sent pictures and all kinds of stuff. So I'm having a lot of fun with that, but I'm also kind of surprised at the number of people who follow those things. I had no idea.
It's not follow those things, Tom. It's follow you. You're the chief. You will always be the chief.
Well, you know what, Lisa,
go
like
ahead.
I used to say to my mother, when you've got a face like this that only a mother could love, I mean, what is that? You know, it's an anomaly, and people want to find out where this voice is emanating from. It's quite interesting.
So are you in Chicago right now?
I am.
Okay,
up here in the Edgewater neighborhood, and I'm looking out on the haze and all that Steve referenced a moment ago. You know, it's interesting, this smoke up in Canada, they burned an area the size of the state of Georgia up there. There are 201 fires burning today. There are 103 of them out of control. It's just amazing. And the University of Wisconsin has a satellite research group up there known as the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. And they came up with an interesting animation of the smoke that they can follow by satellite. And wow, I mean, that plume originates from fires that are burning all the way west to British Columbia and far western Canada. And then the smoke moves eastward and then arcs southward across Lake Huron and back into Chicago. And you can see the intensity of the pollution and the particulates and all, they're moving with it. And a strand of that pollution coming into Chicago is among the most densely populated by particulates and aerosols coming in off these terrible fires up in Canada. So that's why we have this air quality alert. We also have a wind off the lake, so we've developed a temperature inversion because, you know, when you blow an easterly wind into Chicago, as we all know, off the lake, it's cooler by the lake. But that dome of air is about 2,000 feet deep. And into it, pollutants, everything from car and truck exhaust to anything else worth throwing into the air, gets trapped in that lower 2,000 feet and builds up. And that's usually when you get these air quality alerts, like the one we're in now, and that's, as Steve has indicated, has been extended into and through tomorrow.
So, Tom, we're getting so many questions about that because many people think, well, this has probably been happening for years. Is there a summer system? Is there something specific that is now regularly affecting Chicago? And do you anticipate that this will be our summer now? Or is there any hope that they, you know, that weather patterns change or they get these fires extinguished?
You know what? I'll tell you, Lisa, there are a lot of things operating here, and among them is the warming climate. But do you know they had a beetle infestation that took out the spruce trees in the entire western end of the continent? And this includes our western U.S., western Canada. I used to see it when I went up to Alaska. All these dead spruce trees, and they sit there. And when you get an unusual warm or dry pattern, they're fuel that can burn. And I think that's part of the basis for some of these fires that erupt. We are definitely in a new paradigm. These fires, you know, I was at a conference out in Washington, D.C. a couple years ago, and I talked to the fire chief from Reno, Nevada. He was out there in Washington to testify at this same conference I was at on climate change, and he had left Reno with a fire burning 14 miles from his home. And we had an hour and a half to talk before this conference began. And I said, you know, Captain, it seems like these fires are burning more frequently. Oh, he said, Tom, I've been doing this 35 years. He said, the breed of fire that we get today is like nothing I've ever experienced in my firefighting career. He said, they're impossible to put out. They spread like wildfire, and they're hotter than anything that we've had before. I have an intern who works for the Naval Research Group out there, and his specialty is all the smoke and ash and all that's set up into the air by these wildfires. And he said it's kind of like volcanic eruptions. They send all kinds of pollutants up, and because they're propelled up with such heat, they blow, you know, they latch onto the upper winds, and they're distributed all over the place. You can often track these things making multiple trips around the planet in the upper air.
Wow.
So it seems to be a new paradigm we're in with these fires burning each year.
Hey, Tom, is there any way you can hang out through the news? We have so many other questions coming in. And, of course, we want to talk about the cuts to the National Weather Service and their impact.
Yeah, Lisa, I'd love to. No problem
awesome.
At all.
Tom Skilling is with us, and we'll be back on we'll be back to our conversation. He's not going anywhere after Steve's news next on 720 WGN. Tom Skilling is with us today, and we are all watching what is happening on Twitter, and that is the unraveling of the relationship between Donald Trump and Elon Musk. And Elon Musk just brought up the Epstein files. It's getting crazy. If you want to follow someone on social media that uplifts you and brings you joy, that's Tom Skilling. We were talking about that. And Tom, you are so inspiring.
You are so nice, Lisa.
Well, there is a boy who is 7 by the name of Major who is listening right now, and you have inspired him to be a meteorologist. He has his own weather station set up, and I thought maybe you could say hi.
Well, hello. And this is Major?
Major, yes.
Congratulations.
Yes.
That's awesome. You know, it is amazing, Lisa, the number of people in my line of work, in this line of work, who have started, you know, it all stems from a childhood fascination with the weather. And I'm telling you, you know, this may indeed be a sign of where Major is going with his life. And, you know, there's an advantage to starting early with this interest because you inform yourself and read about all kinds of different aspects of meteorology and kind of gives you a head start when you get into your formal studies for it and all. And it's such an interesting field. You know, I've been doing this for 57 years, and it is amazing to me what I've seen in the last half century. There's been more progress in meteorology, our ability to measure and forecast the atmosphere, in the last half century than in all the time back to 340 BC when Aristotle wrote his first treatise on meteorology. It's been amazing. We've seen Doppler radar, satellite, computer modeling, buoys, just all kinds of tools come online that help us understand better how the weather works.
Some of these tools now, Tom, are not being utilized. Like all the weather balloons are no longer being launched.
Yeah.
And according to CNN, 30 National Weather Service offices across the nation, including three in Wisconsin, have zero meteorologists on board.
You know, you and I have talked about this, Lisa. And in fact, you gave us a wonderful platform in which to share this with our listeners. Because I don't think most people, they're busy with their lives. They don't understand what goes on in an agency like NOAA or the National Weather Service. You know, it's interesting, Lisa. I think our discussions about this rattled some cages and also concerns about the ill-prepared nature of some of these offices for tornado season and the hurricane season. There was a sudden run to get some people into some of these understaffed offices in these hurricane-prone areas in the last couple of weeks. But, you know, this does not represent – there's a general anti-science bias to what's going on right now. And it's sad because we depend on the National Weather Service. It's the source of our warnings about extreme weather. They are the source of all weather information. You know, some people wrote me after we talked about this and said, well, I'll just go to Jim Cantore on the Weather Channel or I'll go to AccuWeather. Where do people think those folks get the information? It all comes from the National Weather Service. And if we destroy its infrastructure, we're undermining the whole weather infrastructure in this country.
Right.
And as our numbers grow and the impacts from weather grow, we've got to have timely warnings.
I was just reading that the Green Bay office, Green Bay, Wisconsin, was launching weather balloons twice a day for the past 80 years. And now because of the cuts, it's once a day.
You know, it sounds like a crazy thing in this high-tech world with satellites and Doppler radars and buoys and all the rest. But the weather balloon and the instrument payload it carries through the atmosphere, taking readings all the way as it ascends, gives us the most complete read of the atmosphere. And, you know, there are ways to work around that on many days. But when you've got weather breaking, like a hurricane approaching the coast or a tornado outbreak, you've got to have that detailed read of the atmosphere to understand the environment in which these storms are developing. And that's what we're losing every time we lose a weather station that's sending up these weather balloons. There are ways, workarounds, that will make it maybe not obvious to us 90% of the time, but it's the 10% of the time when you've got life-threatening weather going on and all that we honestly can't quantify exactly what the impact will be of losing these data. You know, whenever a hurricane or a tornado outbreak is threatened in this country, the first thing the Weather Service has done over the years up till now is launch extra weather balloons at times of the day when they normally weren't launched so we could just see whether or not things were developing the way they were supposed to. We're losing that capability in vast stretches of the central United States in particular. And the question is, will this impact these models that we look at and their ability to forecast hurricanes moving in? And it may be that forecast bust that really is consequential, which leads us to understand exactly what the impact of this has been.
Yeah. According to U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell from Washington State, she said last year there were 27 weather disaster events that cost taxpayers $1 billion and totaled, for all of them, $183 billion and resulted in 568 deaths. She said in her state, she has seen what has happened when meteorologists were not in charge, and that has resulted in death. And I think that's been the concern that you have been trying to raise, and it's hard to put into words the impact that this has had. But I know you're talking about it tomorrow night at Navy Pier, right?
Well, you know, we've got a big climate conference, and it will certainly be one of the issues, I'm sure, that comes up. So will the, you know, we had Louis Uccellini, the former head of the Weather Service, who's retired now. He's a professor out at University of Maryland. And I wrote him just the other day, and I said, hey, what are you hearing about where we're going? Because a lot of all these cuts and all have been done pretty non-transparently. So it's hard getting a handle on exactly what's going on. But he confirms the fact there has been an attempt to hire some people in some of these understaffed offices. But on the other hand, the cuts continue to NOAA, NASA, the National Science Foundation, the U.S. Geological Survey. You know, among the things the Weather Service predicts is are tsunamis, flooding, hurricanes, tornadoes, snowstorms, cold waves, heat waves. And you know what, Lisa? Among the things that have been cut, no longer will measurements be made or funded on the ice loss in the Arctic. On they're talking about shutting down the Mauna Loa carbon dioxide measurement station out in Hawaii. And there are all kinds of associated science that are being cut back. And that concerns us because we've been a world leader in science because of the investment our government makes in science research. And that includes in the medical arena as well. So we got to keep an eye on this and make sure, you know, our legislators know how we feel about all this.
We have to take a break, Tom. Of course, there's a bazillion questions. I don't want to hold you any longer than you've already been gracious enough, but I hope you can...
Lisa, I'm here as long as you want me.
All right, then that's it. He's staying. He's answering some of your questions next. Right now, Mary's got your current conditions and a check on traffic. Chief meteorologist of WGN-TV for many, many, many years. He retired, spent time in Hawaii, happens to be back in Chicago right now. The one and only Tom Skilling is with us, and people are saying he's such a joy, and you really are. You've always been so kind to everyone that you encounter.
You are so sweet. I'll tell you, Lisa, I say the same thing right back at you. We have wonderful listeners, don't we? No question about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Back to just for a couple minutes on the cuts and the sign of hope, because they are trying to hire people back, or are they hiring new people?
They've hired some people back, but, you know, there's no indication there's been a sea change in the general policy. You know, for instance, Lisa, I know you, as the wife of a farmer, a farm family, are interested in meteorological information. The budget cuts took the Midwest Regional Climate Center offline. They're based at Purdue University, and they generate a lot of agricultural meteorological products, like soil moisture, follow drought, and all the rest. They've come back online, but only through mid-June, and then they'll review the whole thing again and see whether or not they're going to re-up it. You also mentioned Senator Cantwell's reference to billion-dollar disasters. That, by the way, is one of the things they've announced will be cut. No longer is NOAA going to keep track of the billion-dollar disasters as a result of weather extremes. That, sea ice is going, carbon dioxide measurements. Now, there are other ways to get these data. I'm sure the insurance industry will step up to the plate because they're well aware of the losses and all that come, and they're increasing from these weather extremes. But we've got to keep an eye on this, no question about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And back to the wildfire, for people who weren't with us a little earlier, you were talking about the particulate matter that we don't see, but obviously when we have the second worst air quality in the world right now in Chicago, that's something we're all breathing in.
Yeah, and by the way, the particulates are coming from the Canadian fires, and that's tracked by satellite. It's amazing the stuff we can follow on satellites. We follow Saharan dust that comes off Africa, and it can affect the eastern and southern United States, sometimes even gets up into the Midwest. But it seems like most of the particulates we're dealing with now come off Canadian fires. And what happens is, this smoke blows in at the high levels, gives us that smoky look to the sky. You don't always smell it down here at ground level, but at night, as the atmosphere cools, there's a downwelling of air, and some of the smoke can come down to the surface with its particulates. And that's part of the reason we've got this air quality issue going right now. This settles into the lower atmosphere, and the light wind regime down here in a temperature inversion traps it, and so it has nowhere to go, and it's hard to get rid of it once it's here.
And then one last question, Tom, because this has been a thing we've brought up. We all feel like it has been windier, like the winds are stronger in northern Illinois this year. Is that our perception, or is there anything to it?
Do you know, it's interesting. We do keep wind data. The Weather Service records that. There isn't a lot of information on the average wind speed over, say, a month's time. But I've heard that same comment from a lot of folks. And it's interesting. I don't think people's perception is off on that. I can't quantify it for you right now because I'd have to dig into the stats more and generate my own stats on the averages. But, you know, we all know we're not the Windy City because of the winds around here. That's right. A derogatory term that was applied to the city by the New York Press back in the 1800s. But we are a windy city. There's no question about it. And, you know, our juxtaposition with Lake Michigan, where the winds can blow undeterred and without the buildings and terrain features to slow them down, does allow wind to come in here. And when you have a series of strong weather systems that are essentially big wind machines coming through the area, it's quite possible that we are windier than normal. Enough people have made that comment that I'm inclined to believe there may be something to that, Lisa.
Thank you so much for joining us, Tom. We really appreciate the time you've given us today. I hope you enjoy your time in Chicago.
Oh, Lisa, I always do. And I so enjoy talking with you. And by the way, congratulations to Steve. I'm 40 years at WGN Radio. I know you guys have been talking about that, and I've seen it on the WGN Radio website and all the rest. I've been following that with interest. I remember Steve from way back when we worked in the combined radio TV newsrooms over at on Bradley Place.
You know, you mentioned that, Tom, and it brought back some great memories of those days.
Steve, you remember the carpeting we had in that newsroom? It had been there, I think, since the colonel put the station on the air.
There were stains
on the carpeting, and we all thought each one probably had a significant story related to it.
Right.
But it was fun.
You know, the thing I remember, and we got to go, I do this to Lisa, but Tom used to love the jokes, right? I would tell you jokes, and but he could never remember it. So I would tell him a joke, and then Tom would go off to tell it to someone else. And he'd have to come back and say, Steve, how did that joke end?
That's me. Yep. I'll tell you, still, I lose the punchline, you know? It's a great joke, and I laugh for it. Jim Ramsey and I used to tell each other jokes, so we'd laugh for 2 straight hours, and then I'd forget the punchline to the darn thing, so I couldn't plagiarize it.
You've been there for some great times, Tom.
Thank you for joining us.
Guys, good to talk to you. Have a great day.